Hello, and welcome to What's Brewing, CISFA? What's Brewing, CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community Colleges Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as a 2020-2021 CISFA president. Our co-host Dana is off on vacation this week, so I'll be flying solo here on What's Brewing, CISFA. So let's go ahead and start the show. And welcome to another episode of What's Brewing, CISFA. Let's start off with our first cup, everyone. It's a solo cup this morning because my co-host Dana is off on vacation this week, so I don't believe she's going to join us on this show. Anyways, we're going to have a couple shows this week, the week between Christmas and New Year Day, and we're really just going to do a compendium of our favorite I Dare You To segments here. So what I've done is I've collected up for this first show of two this week all the books that I've reviewed with Dana and ones that some of our co-hosts have brought on, and created a list of as many as I could remember that we covered in different episodes. And so I looked back on my list and I saw that I'd gone through quite a few books even before Dana was able to join us as co-host, about a dozen shows into the start of What's Brewing, CISFA. And in those first few shows, and I think it was episode number 5, way back when, I had 4, 5, 6 books, according to my list here, that I was talking about and had put out there as ones I was either reading, had read, or hoped that I would have time to read at some point in 2020. And I don't know about you, but 2020 being what 2020 was, I still hope that some of us found time to read those extra books we had on the shelf, or we supported our local bookstores, our small ones sometimes, our big ones too, we got to keep them all around, and bought some extra books. And this first book on the list I can see is exactly one of those. The first one I have on my list is Moonwalking with Einstein, written by Joshua Foer. Hopefully I got that right. Foer. I bought this book because it was an interesting read to me in theory, because it was about memorization and memory. And one of those things you start to worry a little bit about as you get older is whether or not your memory is working as well. And I think of all the books I've read, all the articles I read, I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal online, and all those other things. And then the next day it's like, what did I read? What was the concept? What was it about? And I'm not that good at quoting things, so I'd be a horrible poet, let alone a reciter of poetry. But Moonwalking with Einstein, Joshua Foer, the writer, he's a writer by trade, explored the memorization skills of many people. And there's a world championship to this that he actually entered and did pretty well in. So I wanted to know if I'd get some ideas out of this. And they talk a lot about different memory tricks, I guess you could call it, on how to become better about memorizing things. Things like memorizing the order of cards in a randomly shuffled deck, or multiple decks, or memorizing a very long poem that's unpublished. So although it's not a direct do-it, a instructional manual, Moonwalking with Einstein was a good read still to kind of understand a whole subculture that probably people would never run into unless they're part of. Another book on my list from an early episode was One Day She'll Darken by Fauna Hodel. Fauna Hodel was the grandchild of Dr. George Hodel. Dr. George Hodel is a former doctor in L.A. back in the 40s and 30s and such. And an interesting character in that I only knew of any of this because his son, Steve Hodel, not the father of Fauna, but I guess the uncle, was a detective with the L.A. Police many years ago. And at some point along the line, through happenstance and talking to family members and his own research, came to the conclusion that his father, George Hodel, was the Black Dahlia murderer, among other potential crimes that he might have committed. And so there's a series of books out that I didn't cover all on this show, but definitely have read, including books called The Black Dahlia Avenger, Most Evil 2, by Steve Hodel. And it talks about how his father might have been, in particular, the Black Dahlia murderer. Fauna Hodel, in this book, On One Day She'll Darken, talks about her life story growing up, basically given away by her mother, believing that she was had an African-American father, growing up in Vegas, and kind of like the run-in with the rest of the family, including the grandfather. If you saw, there was a show, I Am the Night, I believe it was called, on either FX or TBS or one of those channels about a year ago or so. It was a fictionalized account of this book that delves into and comes to L.A., where she gets involved with him, and obviously it's fictionalized, really puts forth the idea that he probably was the Black Dahlia murderer. So it was an interesting read, just because it's part part mostly true, and after watching the TV show, you can see where it takes off and becomes a little more fictional, but certainly an interesting read. A pair of books beyond that on the same show that I talked about from Mark Manson. And of course, if you've seen the books out, and they're very popular books from Mark Manson, there's some profanity in the title, so I'm going to skip the profanity. But the first book he put out, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Mess, and then the follow-up book, Everything is Messed, are just interesting books because, you know, the first one was, you know, subtitled A Counterintuitive Approach to Living a Good Life. And it kind of delves into that, how we sometimes give too much credence and put too much energy into things that really don't have that much influence over giving us a better life or making us better people. The second book, that subtitled to Everything is Messed, is a book about hope. And it comes through and it talks about so many things about how we approach life and how we think of others. And again, trying to think about if we really are looking for a better life, it comes down to some simple things about trying to be a better person. I hate to give away the spoiler there. Try to better yourself. Now, many of my books on my list kind of fall into that same trajectory as far as trying to be a better person. Because I think there's really two ways to approach life in some basic view of it. You know, one is we all would love to have a better world, more peace, equality, fairness. All the isms would disappear. How do we do that, though? You know, some want to do it through legislation. Some want to do it through family, society, church, religion, philosophical approaches, and a variety of other ways. But some of these books that I've read are really about the personal, about personal development, how you, by making yourself a better person, makes it better for others and yourself. And hopefully, you know, again, on top of that, hopefully then influences others to be better. Better to themselves, better to others, their family, their friends. And so that's kind of one of those themes that I see that runs through a number of these books that we're going to talk about today. Continuing on with some books that I talked about at that first episode that I even brought up books at all. The book Loser Think by Scott Adams. Those who think they know the name Scott Adams, know him as the creator of the comic strip Dilbert. But Scott Adams doesn't rest on his laurels. That's for sure. Now, he's written numbers of books. I can't even tell you exactly how many books he's written. And if I read back here, I'd try to figure it out. But he's got bestsellers, including The Dilbert Principle, Dogbert's Top Secret Management Handbook, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big, and a more recent book called Win Bigly. And then this book called Loser Think, How Untrained Brains Are Ruining America. And in short, it talks about how so many of us create false beliefs in our own head based upon what he calls loser think. And he calls it an epidemic of sneaky mental habits trapping its victims in their own bubbles of reality. I think we see this in ourselves and others all the time. We may not think of it this way. So he's not calling people losers. He's calling how we think loser think. Things like, you know when history will repeat and when it won't. We can tell the difference between evidence and coincidence. The simplest explanation is usually true. And stay in your channel. You know, like stay in your lane. And he explores so many good things here. And again, he's kind of a Renaissance man beyond comics and such. He's learned hypnotism. He's learned how to be an effective speaker after not really being one at all. But this book is really great as far as getting you to understand and really maybe start to see where loser think infects yourself or others and how best to avoid it, how best to get around it, how best to be a better thinker on almost any topic in life. So the book Loser Think by Scott Adams, I talked about that book months ago, but I just wrapped up reading it recently, and definitely go read it. Or as I had suggested to a friend who's big into audiobooks, go out and get the audiobook and listen to it when you're doing your commute back and forth to wherever you're going. Now, a couple other books here on my list from later episodes, I think episode number 9 actually, come from a person named Cal Newport. And I happened to discover these both a couple years ago here. Just an interesting writer on things. He's a professor over at Georgetown University and author of 6 books, 2 of them which I've read. The first one I read was called Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. And I happened to be reading this, trying to finish it up during a conference a number of years ago, in between different breakout sessions and such. And it really talks about how we approach our digital lives. So many of us find, interest in Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Now it's TikTok. Snapchat, I think, still exists. Many years ago was MySpace. I think it still exists. I'm not really certain about that. But, and then again, also just being online, getting our news and such. But this book really, believe me, it's more than just one of the bottom lines in it, which is about potentially looking at getting yourself off social media and looking at, again, what do we do digitally? How do we interact with people or react to others? And so it's just a really great read on that topic. I'll say that it was one of the influencing factors of why I myself got off of most of my social media. I wasn't a daily user, to put it nicely. I wasn't a daily user of social media anyways. But even that once a week check in on Facebook or Twitter, I had to really think to myself, A, for Facebook, I was using it to connect with family and friends. How many were I really connecting with? And also, maybe it was because at that time, it wasn't an election year. It was a little more innocuous. But as we got closer and closer to elections, what were my friends talking about? Did they stop talking about their new puppies and their family and outings and such and talk more politics? Which, again, with any one of us, and again, this is the confirmation bias of life, I guess, you'll, in a sense, get closer to and gravitate into people who talk similarly to you about politics and have similar thoughts. And the ones who don't, those are all your weirdo friends that you don't want to ever talk to again. And why should you put that into your life if you really don't need to? And that's really what I was thinking about. So digital minimalism made me see, do I really have value in all these social media platforms, among other things? The second book from Cal Newport was Deep Work: Rules for Focused Success in a Distracted World. And it really boiled down to four, I know because I have a post-it note sitting on the front of the book, four rules that come out of this book. And it's about trying to learn how to best manage time when you need to do things that require time, valuable work, research. So rule number one from the book was work deeply. So taking the time to actually work deeply, not being distracted, not trying to do emails and reading and a Zoom meeting all at once, you know, stuff like that. Number two, embrace boredom, something that many of us may have lost during this pandemic as we try to fill time just to fill time so that there isn't an empty space. But we do it anyways before and hopefully soon after this pandemic. We fill all our time with something, whether it's the Candy Crushes of the world in games or flipping through YouTube videos of cats and kittens. But really, embracing boredom where you have downtime. We forget about the value of downtime. Funny enough, rule number three from this book, quit social media. Again, because you have to really see, is it beneficial to you? Or are you doing it just because everyone else is doing it? And number four, drain the shallows. You know, that's again about draining out those shallow points of your day where you're doing things that are not really of value. You think that, oh, they're entertainment. It's easy to wash away things and say, oh, well, it was entertaining. I just had some time to do whatever. But is it not really taking away time from you to do things of more value to yourself or to others? So Deep Work, the second of two books that I read from Cal Newport that I definitely would recommend for others. We're going to continue with some more books here in just a little bit, but let's take a little musical break to get us into our second cups. And just like that, we are ready for everybody, our second cups. It took a little extra time to fill that one up because today is our I Dare You to Read compendium episode. I am Dennis, if you've caught us here in the middle of the show. And Dana, my co-host, is off on vacation, hopefully enjoying herself and not plugged in, maybe. If anything, for no other reason than the last couple books I talked about, kind of focus on the idea of unplugging yourself from things. Now, when you are plugged in, though, I have to say these next two books that came out of episode number 22, were about the time that I was helping work on some training for our student services people at my school. And so one of the big things that is one of my biggest peeves in life is email. Obviously, it's essential to doing business these days. Nobody's printing up memos and sending them out. We barely print and mail anything now. And during this pandemic, it's a little harder too because many of us may not have work type printers nearby. I don't have a printer at all, so it's a little harder. So email is that much more essential to the work that we do, but has it not gone out of control in some ways? Are people using email where they really should be using some other platform? A chat, a Teams type of thing, a Slack. There's so many products out there. I don't want to name them all or not give full credit for anything out there I haven't used but are really good. But, you know, how do we make it useful for ourselves? And how do we put across to others who we are and what we're asking of them? So there were two books from episode 22 of the What's Brewing Cease for Show. The first book was called Send, The Essential Guide to Email for Office and Home by David Shipley and Will Shalby, I believe. And this is just a little tiny little book. It's not big, but it really is just so great to understanding email. And again, how to write a perfect email. The types of emails that are out there as far as the types that you want to, you know, you could be writing for others. You know, are you requesting something? Are you responding? Are you just trying to give some facts? Are you thanking somebody? There's even an example of apologies or the groveling email. When it's best to do that. And it also, if anything, this book and something that we put into the training for our student services, it was me and a couple others from student services, was about knowing when you should use email and when you should, again, use some other platform, whether you use something like Microsoft Teams or Slack or some other platform where chat is easier than emails. I mean, nobody likes to have an email string of conversation of 20 to 25 emails when it's a bunch of thank yous or yes, I agree to that. Or when, you know, when you're not taking a vote or other things like that. Maybe that's better in a chat thing where it's a topic you want to discuss on. Email is horrible for that in my mind. So how do you make best use of it? So the book, I can't better recommend it. I bought multiple copies for my staff over the year. And again, we use it for a whole training thing. If you need that PowerPoint, just let me know. The other book that kind of goes along with it is called Unsubscribe: How to Kill Email Anxiety, Avoid Distractions, and Get Real Work Done by Jocelyn Glay. And she's more of a technical writer of type, you know, a little more into the technical world here. But it was, again, a great book about how to better address yourself when using email. You know, how to picture how your message is going to be seen by others. You know, it's, again, talking about formatting. Not wasting other people's time. So it's, again, a relatively small book. I loved one of the little quotes in the middle here. Don't email when you're angry, hungry, or tired. And I'm going to quote right from the book. If you work a lot, you are probably in one of the aforementioned states quite often. It's tempting to email in this condition, especially when you're angry. Isn't that true? But you will always, always regret it. Take those words, if anything, from Jocelyn Glay in her book, Unsubscribe, and it'll make your life better and those around you better. Now, throw in there were some books that we got from our guests on the show. I haven't read them all. I may have a few on the shelf. Anna Faye, back on episode 17, our first interviewee, talked about the book Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less, and how that's guiding her life, personal and work. Book is by Greg McKeon. Mike Deere, our current past president of CSFA, had a couple books that were offered up, I think, by people on his campus. How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi. And also, So You Want to Talk About Race. I would say the first name, but I would get it wrong. Don't worry, it'll be in the show notes, everyone. But two books that I believe is student services people on campus were reading. A couple more books in line with what we do here in our work as members of CSFA in our regular daily lives. The book Filing the FAFSA by Mark Kantrowitz and David Levy. And they printed these up until a few years ago. In my mind is, I think I once called it, in fact, when talking to Mr. Levy, I said it was like the nerd's guide to the FAFSA. And I use it all the time. I have the printed version. There's like a PDF that you can get online. But this Filing the FAFSA book is a guide to completing the federal aid, free application for federal student aid. But it goes into all the little details that you need to know. And in my case, although it might not be 100% up to date with the new way that we do FAFSAs, you know, having FSA IDs instead of PINs, having the My Student Aid mobile app, relatively new, it really does address things like understanding which items are assets and which items are not assets, or how to treat certain assets on the FAFSA. And those are probably the biggest questions you get from parents. Trying to understand how you work with a Coogan account. We can talk more about that in another episode, maybe someday. How do you treat UTMAs and UGMAs, you know, these different gifts to minors and such. Filing the FAFSA. Just a very great book to have nearby when you're helping a parent or you're doing a presentation and someone offers up a question of, how do I treat my X, Y, and Z property asset for the FAFSA? The other book that goes along with it, it's a little more recent. It's called How to Appeal for More College Aid. More College Financial Aid. Subtitled, The Secrets to Negotiating a Better Financial Aid Offer and Getting More Financial Aid in the First Place, from Mark Kantrowitz. Now, I know this book, to some of my colleagues out there, would probably be considered controversial. Because how dare we talk about how to get more aid and negotiate and stuff like that? There's no negotiating. It's all professional judgment and all that. And I tend not to get so up into the wording of things. And thus, I bought the book, and I read it, and it's good information, and it helps you understand a little bit more about financial aid. Now, it's not that applicable, I'll say, some parts of this, to us at the community colleges. We generally don't sit on a lot of institutional funding that we put into a complex enrollment management matrix when making financial aid awards to our students. That's just the reality of things. We're mostly talking federal and state aid, some scholarships, maybe some small amount of institutional money, but we don't have a whole lot of flexibility compared to, say, private schools or higher cost public schools, where some of these principles make a lot more difference. And so there's some good advice in the book about how to write an appeal letter, how to write a good one versus a bad one, things to take into consideration. And if anything, this might be a little more useful nowadays for us to understand circumstances that our students are going through, and their families, of course, during this pandemic, and how we probably have seen an increase of the number of students asking us about making adjustments to their financial aid eligibility. For those who are outside the financial aid world, you know, there's a big gap between the information you put on a FAFSA for your income and when you actually go to school. For example, this past fall of 2020, as I was helping high school seniors in a Zoom world understand the FAFSA and have their parents understand it too, we were talking about, of course, high school seniors who aren't going to be in college until the fall of 2021. And, of course, the FAFSA comes out, the federal aid form, in the fall of 2020 for that fall of 2021 school year. But you don't use income from 2020, you use income from the tax year of 2019. So if you think about it, that tax year is already a year to 2 years old by the time the student shows up at school. So students who have been going to school during this pandemic, and during this pandemic, they or their parents may have lost work or income. Well, that wouldn't be taken and seen on a FAFSA for another year or so. But what about the reality of now? And this is what we talk about when we talk about professional judgment, where colleges and their financial aid office staff can look at the circumstances at hand and see if, based upon the types of changes we're seeing, losses of income, losses of jobs, companies completely closing up, early retirements, things like that that definitely affect the fiscal strength and stability of the family, and putting those into the current FAFSA that we're using for the current school year and seeing if that makes a difference in aid eligibility. So, if anything, how to appeal for more college financial aid by Mark Kantrowitz is a good primer to at least understanding these type of circumstances better, because we certainly are still seeing those rolling around into community colleges. Now, I can see on my list here and looking at time, we've got quite a few more books to go through. So why don't we take another small little break, and we'll use our last sip segment for more reading. And just like that, again, we're back here on the What's Brewing Cecil show for our last sip segment. And the best use time, I'm not even going to add more I dare you to's today. I want to cover some more of these books here. The show might run a little long today, but hey, you get a little extra bonus me today. And hopefully Dana on our show that we're going to tape on Friday, which will be a compendium of the I dare you to watch or I dare you to listen to episode selections we've made. While we're on financial aid, real quickly, another book, Reinventing Financial Aid, Charting a New Course to College Affordability, a book put out by Andrew Kelly and Sarah Goldrick-Robb as editors, and a forward was done by Martha Cantor. So this was a very interesting book, I can tell, because I have tape tabs all the way through it to help me understand different things about financial aid, affordability, the promise of our Promise program. So many states have launched into, you know, free 2 years, free 1 year, some combination thereof, understanding, again, how financial aid is more than just trying to cover tuition and fees and things like that. That's what some people, probably initially most of us would have thought, oh, it just covers our tuition. Well, might cover fees, books and supplies, room and board, whether you live on campus or off campus, etc. And again, if we're not really covering that as part of our Promise program and free college, as we say, are we really helping students, all students, get in and be able to afford a college education? So just one of those books out there to definitely look at. Reinventing Financial Aid. I talked about that on episode number 32. Now, some books I have not read yet but are on the shelf, and I think I've, and during the episode, also talked about books to read if for no other reason than they have interesting titles. And many of these are higher ed related. So Community Colleges as Incubators of Innovation, subtitle, Unleashing Entrepreneurial Opportunities for Communities and Students. This is a book by Rebecca Corbin. Another book, Robot Proof, Higher Education in the Age of Artificial Intelligence by Joseph Oun, A-O-U-N. It just sounds interesting to me, is that book. Thinking about, again, how will artificial intelligence affect higher education? Not just the way we deliver, which we've learned quite a bit about delivery of higher education remotely over this last year, but also just the whole general, you know, what do we study, how we study it, and how do we apply artificial intelligence in higher education? Another book, Demographics and the Demand for Higher Education by Nathan D. Graw. Talked about a couple episodes there later. It's a small little book. I haven't read it yet, but I think it's something many of us, even at community colleges, should probably delve into. Again, it's a small book, Demographics and the Demand for Higher Education. If for no other reason, so that we can understand better the students that will be coming to us in the next year, in the year after that, and beyond. We are going to see changes in the demand for us at community colleges, four-year schools, the types of programs we offer, degrees and certificates, and what people will use and value as far as, again, higher education isn't just about getting your job or having a career. It's about, again, making yourself a better person in society, understanding history, understanding science and the scientific method. And so there's a lot of value that comes out of higher education. How do we ensure that as the demographics and costs for and delivery modes change for higher education? Some other books, I'll just going to run through the list here pretty quickly as we get to the end here. Linda Williams, a past president of CSFA, had offered up that we read any of the books by Brené Brown. First name is B-R-E-N-E, last name Brown. Interesting TED talker, podcaster herself, and happened to be on a different podcast I was listening to, hosted by Alan Alda, about science and how we communicate science. I lent out a book to a friend called Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America. It was a great read from a couple years ago by Michael Ruhlman. It's just great to understand how the whole grocery business works. So it talks about the history of and where we're going. A couple books I have yet to get to, The Revenge of Analog, Real Things and Why They Matter by David Sachs, and Subscribed, Why the Subscription Model Will Be Your Company's Future and What You Can Do About It by Tien Zhou. Two books that are on the shelf waiting to be read. If you don't read and you have, if anything, you want to subscribe to a magazine that is not a wasted inch of paper, because first, it's like a little book. I recommend National Affairs, which almost always has an article on education, if not higher education. So National Affairs magazine comes out. You can find it online, I think, at like nationalaffairs.com or something. Also, the Hoover Digest that comes out of the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, another quarterly type of publication. It almost always has an article or two in it about higher education. From David Shook, one of our interviewees, he recommended a book series by Jocko Willink called The Way of the Warrior Kid. It's books that he had been buying for his kid about, you know, kind of like really understanding yourself as a child, you know, as a kid, you know, and being strong. Not just physically strong, but strong, you know, mentally too, on how to handle growing up. And it's a series of books. I just finished a book called Reader Come Home, The Reading Brain in a Digital World, written by Marianne Wolfe. A very interesting read, because in my mind, it brings up all the questions about how is our reading habits, how are our reading habits influenced or affected by how we intake and where we find our material to read. I mean, I have lots of books, but more people have ebooks. Because you have an ebook reader, I can carry around hundreds of books now. Do we read as intensely or intently when we read on a digital reading platform or reading online? You know, you just, you know, probably the one thing I yell at my computer the most is when I'm at a website, even when I've got a paid subscription, is I'm just trying to read the article. Why does it have to be broken up every three paragraphs with an ad for something else or a link to another article? I just want to read the article. But how is this affecting us, let alone the reading skills that have to be gained by our kids? You know, whether it's kindergarten level or fifth grade, and there's some different breakdowns that he gives, that Marianne, the writer, gives in the book about how to make sure that we're still instilling, the ability for students and our kids to learn how to read properly so they can apply it later in life. Just a great book, Reader Come Home. The end is a little bit more of what we can do about it kind of thing. The rest of the book is mostly exploring the issues that arise in this digital world. The last book I'll put out there is a series of books from Encounter called their Broadside series. It's these tiny little books, maybe 30 pages at the most, on singular topics. The one I have in my hand here is called Why America Needs School Choice by Jay Green. This is number 22. I think they're up to like 60 of these, but they're only like $5 or $6. Check out different topics, short intros. Usually the people who write these books, like Mr. Green, have written other books on the subject or in that area of study. So definitely worthwhile to consider. Well, this is going to wrap it up for today. Hopefully, when I next have Dana on the show, we're going to talk about things like New Year resolutions, how our holidays went and all that. But hopefully, you know, we've got a lot of topics to come through in our next few shows as we start 2021. So I want to thank you, my audience, for tuning in today. And hopefully you'll join us on future shows. Check out the CCSFA website at CCSFA.org. That's CCCSFAAA.org. And if you have something to say or you have topics you want to discuss, email us at wbcisfa@gmail.com. For this and all of our podcasts, find our feed through Google Podcasts at podcast.google.com. Or for those using Apple devices, open your podcast app. Search for CISFA and you'll find us on either way. You can also find all of our episodes at wbcisfa.podbean.com. That's the words pod and bean as one word. And you can find us on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and listen to us through the TuneIn app on your Amazon Echo using Alexa. What a great idea. What's Brewing CISFA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of myself and the wonderful Dana. This has been episode number 50, recorded the morning of Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. I hope everyone has a great day and you have a great week. Goodbye.